Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Gio Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, when we left the podcast a week ago, or 6 days plus ago, we were flying high. Lions were 5-1. They had this game against Baltimore. We talked about it, you know, like, hey, this is the Ravens are favored. You know, this is kind of a game we all had circled on the calendar so they could possibly lose.
Yeah.
You and I both picked them to win.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got absolutely trounced 38-6. Everybody's listening is well aware of that. It's not so bad that they lost, because we talked about this one. They're in the range of losing. You know, the issue probably is, you know, it was a no show, similar to the Cowboys and Patriots games last year. And
Panthers game too. Yeah.
Well, the Panthers game, I remember there were parts of it, they were fighting to get back in it. They just couldn't stop them to save their lives or whatever. But here there was, you know, Sunday, there was not a lot of fight in them. And at the same time, you know, the Ravens probably could have beat anyone on Sunday.
Yeah.
They were, if you had to rank the teams 1-32, and I know there were some teams on bias, but if you had to rank the teams, like, Baltimore would have probably beaten every other team that played on Thursday, Sunday, Monday.
Yeah.
You know,
sure.
That week. They played great.
Yeah, for me, it felt a lot like the Carolina game, because I felt like they didn't have an answer on defense. They weren't really changing a whole lot up. They were making the same mistakes. They were overcompensating. And it was eerily similar in a lot of ways for me. Overall, like, you're going to have bad games. You're going to lose bad games. And is that right? One of the worst games you could lose in the worst ways? Yeah, sure. It is. But I look back at how they responded after the Panthers game last year, and they came out and they beat up on a Chicago team that they should have. And so you've got another lesser opponent in front of you this week. And I'm expecting the same thing. I'm expecting them to come out, handle their business. They seem like they're prepared. There's a couple injury things that are concerning, but overall, they're gonna match up well against this Raiders team. And I don't know if it'll be a blowout. I think a lot of people are expecting or maybe hoping, but at the same time, there's a lot of distinct advantages that should get them on the right side of victory again. And I think they need that going into the bye.
All right. And Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
We obviously, since, you know, we know we're not playing on Sunday. Everybody knows that we're not playing on Sunday. And we have the late podcast, not just because it was Monday Night Football. There are other reasons. But, you know, like, the Raiders will be ready to go. You know, the nationally televised game, like you said, like, everybody's expecting a Lions blowout, but at the same time, it's like, well, you know, the Raiders, you know, they're aware that everybody's going to be watching them too on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So should be a good one. Let's dig into the transactions and the injured list. At first, in transactions, Mohamed Ibrahim was assigned to the practice squad IR, which I didn't know existed.
Yeah. it's just a separate designation. It doesn't, when they have regular, like, active roster IR guys, they're only allowed to bring back 8 of those guys to the active roster. This is like a separate category from that, because he's on the practice squad. So it allows them to free up a spot on the practice squad. It also allows them to bring him back to the practice squad without having to count as to one of the 8 guys that they're bringing back from IR. It's just a different category. They didn't always have this. It's relatively new, if I'm not mistaken. And so they used it last year on Obinaze. And this is the second time I can remember them using this designation. But yeah, look, for him, he blew his hip, got dislocated, had to go to the hospital, had to get a reset, stayed overnight, came back the next day. He'll have a chance to return to the practice squad this season. At the same time, I don't know. I mean, like, he's not, this he's
might
not,
be the end of his road.
Yeah. I mean, like, he might just run the season out on IR and collect a paycheck too. Practice squatters make a fair amount of money for everyday Joes like you and me. And, but you know, from an NFL standards standpoint, it's a much lesser pay, but he wasn't on an active roster anyway. So I think for him, he's probably going to say, hey, I'm making a fair amount of money. I'd be more than happy to rehab and go through that and try and get myself right and as healthy as I can be to try and get a second shot in the NFL, you know, maybe next season.
Yeah, well, and you know, I always liked Ibrahim. Let's hope he comes back and plays again, but all these injuries are really starting to pile up on him. Another transaction we should probably note is Marvin Jones Jr.,
yes,
who is retired or been released, depending on who you want. Probably both is true.
Yeah, officially he didn't retire, and there's a couple of reasons for that. If he retires,
he remains with the Lions, right? Like he can't sign with somebody else without.
There's like financial ramifications as well. And so I think he gets paid more money essentially, or he gets paid his full allotment.
If he doesn't retire.
Correct.
As we learned from the Ford family and Barry Sanders and Calvin Johnson.
It's not a big deal in the grand scheme of things, but it's nice to see them do right by Marvin and allow him to make a decision to go be with his family. You know, we don't know what's going on. We know his family lives in California, which is where he has a home, which is where he grew up, which is where he went to college, right? He's maintained a home there his whole life. And, you know, his family's been through some ordeals in the past. And so I don't know exactly what it is. And I don't think a lot of people will. And I think that's fine that we don't know. He needed to step away. And so he is, and he's going to deal with it. And I think everybody's wishing him the best.
Coach Campbell said he's welcome back anytime.
Yeah.
Yep, all right. Yep. Injured list. Running back, David Montgomery, ribs, did not practice Thursday, Friday, or today, which is Saturday. He's out. He will not be playing on Sunday. Excuse me. I already did it.
the good news here is that this is his third game missed, and they didn't IR him, which means if they would have IR'd him, he would have had to have missed four. So it sounds like, you know, if you don't IR this guy and he's going to miss three games, you're not IRing him because you're hoping you can bring him back during the bye most likely, and then maybe able to play in the following game. So I think that's what expectations are, is that he'll come back and be ready to go for the Chargers game in week 10.
They have no idea if he's coming back for week 10.
I mean, that's the guess, that's right? If they thought he would have missed that game, they would have IR'd him, you know, because that would have been the fourth game. So I think their guess was they didn't expect him to be gone for four games. And so that's why they didn't make that move.
All right. Left guard Jonah Jackson, ankle, did not practice Thursday, Friday, Saturday, out.
It's the same thing. Didn't IR him, so they're probably anticipating him being back after the bye. So he won't play, and the Lions may have to be a little creative with their interior offensive lineman this week, but he's missed the last couple, and they've made do, so hopefully they can do the same again.
Center Frank Ragnow, toe injury. Did not practice Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Doubtful for Monday night.
Yeah, I didn't list this because I'm so used to him only having a toe, but he has a calf injury as well. And that's what's limiting him, or what kept him from practicing this week. His injury, they're not ruling him out because they want to see how he goes through the rest of Saturday, all of Sunday, and then all through Monday leading up to the game. They feel like with that extra couple of days that they can have a chance at maybe not ruling him out. Maybe he can play. It doesn't sound like it. I mean, when you don't practice 3 days, it's usually not good. At the same time, Ragnow is, you know, he's used to having days off and then finding ways to play as it is. So, and he's also, it's not like he hasn't been doing stuff. Like, he's just not at their practices where they're doing their walkthroughs and physical play. He's still doing workouts. He's still working with trainers. They're still running him through drills to test and see where he's at. So there's a slim chance that he can play. And if he can't, then, like I said, the interior line is going to get shifted around here.
Right guard, Hal Vitae, back injury, limited Thursday, Friday, questionable for Monday.
I think he's actually closer to the same boat as Ragnow than I think people might think, because with that back injury, even when he wasn't injured or he was just dealing with it, it limited him to the point where that they were playing Osika over him, right? Like, so it's very possible that the back injury limiting him this week could actually keep him from the game. So I think he's a truly questionable designation here, which is a little scary, right? Because if you're missing Jonah, you might be missing Frank. And if Vitae isn't available, well, then you're going to have a very different interior offensive line than I think what you were expecting. So here's what we know. The tackles are the tackles. Decker and Sewell, they're both going to play tackle. We know that. We know that center is either going to be Frank Ragnow or Graham Glasgow. If Frank plays, Graham plays one of the guard positions. If Frank doesn't play, Graham plays center. So after that, it's a little bit unknown. Could it be Graham and could it be Frank, Graham, and Vitae? Absolutely. It could happen that way, that all three guys come back and they're ready to go. At the same time, it could be Aushika, Ragnow, and like Sorsdal or Skipper.
Yeah, it would be Sorsdal, right?
Yeah, it's one of, I don't know if it would be, like, logic says it would be Sorsdal. At the same time, they love Dan Skipper more than I think most people do or should. Right. And so
he never goes away. What did we say?
Right. And so, I think with Jackson not playing and Vitae and Ragnow both on the fence, you're probably going to see Aushika in one capacity or another. And then who knows what's going to happen with the other guard spot. Is it going to be Graham? Is it going to be Vitae? Is it going to be Skipper or Sorzo? I don't know. That's kind of up in the air. At the same time, if you're going to have a week where you are going to be, you know, using your backups on the interior offensive line, this might be it, because the Raiders' defensive line isn't as good as some of the other teams that they've faced this year. So I think they're confident in the guys that they have. Obviously, it could still be really good, or it could end up being a little bit, you know, could be a little bit scary. But again, I think that there's talent there that they're comfortable with.
All right, so we've said we're not going to dig too deeply into the Ravens game, so I'll bring it up now when we talk about injuries. Offensive line in better shape than it is right now on Sunday against Ravens played a bad game. You know, like, and this is their biggest advantage on the football field. And, you know, that's not a great sign, you know, going up against the Raiders, making it seem this game's a little closer than maybe it seems. You know, this is the Lions' biggest advantage here.
Yeah, I think Vitae had a tough game, and I think he's just not right yet.
Even Sewell had two holding penalties.
Yeah. The thing with
Sewell, like him a lot. It's interesting.
It's very forgivable because he's only given up three pressures the entire season. You know what I mean? So, like, a holding call or two every once in a while isn't a big deal when you're only giving up less than a half pressure a game. No sacks, no quarterback hits, like, all through seven games. And I believe two of those pressures came when he was playing left tackle, not right tackle. So he's only given up one pressure from the right side. So it's forgivable. But I do think Vaitai was banged up and now he ends up showing back on the list. It's a real possibility he doesn't play. Like, they may look at that game and say he wasn't ready. They may look at his injury and say, man, we rushed him back too much, and they may back him off. And if they back him off, like I said, it could be, if Glasgow has to play center, it could be Colby Soersdal, right? That's playing right guard, and then Ausika at left. And we get to see what that rookie has real quick, I guess.
Right. All right. Flipping over the defensive side of the ball, defensive tackle Benito Jones, ankle injury, did not practice Thursday, limited Friday, questionable for Monday.
Yeah, so he's getting better. Looks like he's trending in the right direction.
Edge defender Josh Pascal, knee injury, full all week, didn't participate or did not practice on Saturday, questionable for Monday.
Yeah, so that's a late week injury. And as we saw last week with Jerry Jacobs, late week injuries can knock you out of games really easily. So that's something to monitor because he may end up being forced to miss this game.
Linebacker fullback Malcolm Rodriguez, ankle injury, did not practice Thursday, limited Friday, questionable for Monday.
Like Benito, he's trending in the right direction. Looks like he's going to be able to probably play. And so not as worrisome with Malcolm.
Cornerback Jerry Jacobs, knee injury, full participant in practice Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. No injury designation, so he'll be a welcome addition.
Yep, he's good to go. And Campbell noted that he has had a good week of practice, so that's encouraging.
All right. This is where we go into the Ravens review. I don't know if you want to say anything in specific.
Not really.
You want to point out anybody that was good, which I don't think any of them were.
I think the best player on offense was probably Jahmyr Gibbs. The best player on defense was probably John Kaminsky, who is relentless every game and probably deserves to have that recognition. But it was a lesson learning game, and hopefully one they bounce back from. I don't think we need to really talk much about it. It was like you said, it's almost a week ago. So
Amon Ross St. Brown, 13 catches, 2 yards. Yep. But didn't feel like he made any type of impact on the game. You know, it's interesting when you get to the end of the game, it's like, yeah, 13 catches. Like, wow.
Right.
You know, he did catch a lot of them, but like, you know, nothing was really happening, you know, but still, hey, 13, that's impressive. Getting 13 catches in the game. All right.
I think he had 9 or 10 the week before as well. I think it's the second week in a row with double digit catches and broke 100 yards. And I think it's the fourth time he's broke 100 yards this season in the 6 games he's played. So he's been rolling.
Reception machine.
Yeah.
All right. Raiders Monday night. Lions are favored by 8 points, opened at 7.5.
Yeah. That's, seems reasonable. when you look at this team on paper, it sure seems like it's like I said, there's a lot of heavy favorites towards the Lions here.
Game will be shown on ESPN/ABC locally if you don't have cable. I don't know, you know, we have a lot of international listeners. We don't like list off like all the other, you know, channels they'll be on across the world. Like, I remember being in Mexico, like these games, CBS and NBC and Fox games would just be on ESPN down there. And it was confusing. You know, I guess it's not really that confusing. They the different TV deals around the world. All right. Announcers are Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, Lisa Salters down on the sidelines, pointing no Manning cast. This is the game they're skipping.
Yeah. They only do, I don't even think they do half. They only do a handful.
I think they do
8 or something like that. But this happens to be one of the games that they're off. And I think that's probably for the best. Don't get
distracted.
Well, it is.
There's nothing. Yeah, just distract. Yeah, we could watch the Lions go. You know, like we'd be paying too close of attention to the interview with Jeff Daniels. I don't know. Was he on last year's one? I don't know.
I don't know.
It's Guy Fieri question. In the second half for the Raiders position on the game. All right. Referee is Cleet Blakeman, which I know you're happy to hear about. I'd like your note, 14th season as the worst referee in the NFL.
I do not like Cleet Blakeman in really any fashion. I'm disappointed to see him. I'm hoping that they can
on Monday night too. He's got some history on Monday night with the Lions.
His flags are actually low this year, which is good. It's not even the abundance of flags that he throws. It's the ones that don't make sense and the timing, and it's just he's terrible. So hopefully he's a non-factor. Hopefully they can get out to a big enough lead that Cleet can't even ruin the fun.
All right, DVOA rankings. Lions took a little bit of a hit. They were 2 overall, right, last week. They've dropped to 5. Offensively, they check in at 7. 8 passing the ball, 8th running the ball. On defense, they're 9th overall, 9th against the pass, 8 against the rush. Special teams, 9th overall. So, you know, it's consistent across the board. Raiders, overall 30 out of 32. Offense, number 31. Passing the ball, number 28. Running the ball, number 32, dead last. On defense, 25th in DVOA, 21st against the pass, 28th against the run, and right roughly in the middle, the meaty part of the bell curve, 14th in special teams.
Yeah, like I said, advantages to the Lions across the board. We'll get into why, and you know, we'll break down a little bit more of, like, even though they have a lot of talent, why it's not working and why they've had the season they are.
All right, off-season additions. They made a bevy of them. The biggest one was adding quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo. They added an old, I don't know if they crossed paths in New England, but another ex-New England Patriot, wide receiver Jacoby Myers, tight end Austin Hooper, defensive lineman Jerry Tillery, cornerback David Long, and safety Marcus Epps.
Yeah, lots of guys that are in starting roles on both sides of the ball.
On the defensive side, not on these, on the losses, the key losses that the Raiders sustained in the offseason, quarterback Derek Carr, who's now in New Orleans, wide receiver Mac Hollins, tight end Darren Waller, tight end Foster Moreau, edge defender Chandler Jones. That was an ongoing one, even during the season. Linebacker Denzel Perryman, cornerback Rock Yassin, and safety Daron Harmon, who we know well.
Yeah, so it's basically, you know, they're just swapping a lot of these guys out, right? Lost a quarterback, added a quarterback, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, down the line.
All right, the draft picks. First round was defensive end Tyree Wilson, who was on, you know, our radar with the Lions, you know, sitting in a couple of spots in the first round. He could have potentially been taken. Round 2, tight end Michael Mayer from Notre Dame. There were some people, maybe even on this podcast, that were interested in taking there. Round 3, they had 2 players, defensive tackle Byron Young and wide receiver Trey Tucker. In round 4, cornerback Jacorian Bennett and quarterback Aiden O'Connell from Purdue, who did get a chance to start this year already.
Yep.
5th rounder, safety Christopher Smith III. In the 6th round, linebacker Amari Burney. And in the 7th round, Nesta Jade Silvera, defensive tackle.
So 2 of those guys start both on offense. That's Mayer and Tucker. They both end up in as the slot options for them. Tyree Wilson gets kind of sucked into their defensive line rotation. We'll break it down a little bit more, but essentially the way their system works is Max Crosby never leaves the field. And then all the rest of the guys rotate through those 3 or 4 spots, depending on what front they use. And there's 8 of them. And all 8 of them play between 30 and 60% of the snaps. So it's like they all get a hefty amount. And Wilson's just kind of thrown into the bunch with that. He ends up usually with like 35 to 40% of the snaps, which isn't a huge amount, but he lines up in different spots, and he's not even considered one of their starters. He's considered part of the rotation. And so not the guy that, like, or he's not making the immediate impact like I think a lot of people thought he might. But
right.
We talked about it when we were evaluating him. Like, we didn't think he was exactly going to jump into the NFL and start wrecking people. But potential's there. He's just he's still just
starting out.
Yeah, just he's he hasn't made the impact that I think a lot of people thought he might make as a first rounder.
All right, so the Raiders currently 3-4, second place in the AFC West. Last week they lost to the Chicago Bears 30-12, and that Badgett kid from Shepherd University took him to school. Before that, they had a couple of wins there. They beat New England. They beat Green Bay on Monday Night Football, so they have Monday Night Football experience coming into this game.
Yeah, I watched the last three games with the Bears and then the Pats and then the Packers game. Packers game was just that was painful to watch. Like, it just both sides of the ball were terrible in that game. They did real pretty well against New England. I thought they played well. Again, you tend to see that with Belichick disciples. When they play Belichick, they always come ready to go. We saw Matt that
Patricia.
Here.
Yep.
Yeah. In Patricia's first year away from
made him look silly.
Exactly. And then the Chicago game was just, I think, a good conceptualization of what the Raiders have been this season, which is a team that has talent, but they lack execution. They lack the coaching staff to put them in the right decision, right positions to be successful. And Josh McDaniels is proving once again that he's probably not a good head coach. We saw it in Denver a couple years back, right? And he's just his inability to understand like situational football from a broad perspective is kind of alarming. When he decides to be aggressive versus not be aggressive is surprising. For example, if he's trailing and they're in field goal range and he's down two scores and time's running out, but it's fourth and short and he can kick a field goal and then try and get the ball back and go for the score. But instead he goes for it. And then the next time he's in now fourth and long, and now he decides to then kick the field goal. And so he's essentially wasted time and put him and not really ended up with the touchdown. I think like once you decide you're going to go for it, that's what you need to have that mentality. And he doesn't, he decides to go for it. Then he backs off and he's aggressive and then backs off and then he's not aggressive and then tries to be, and it doesn't really, it's just, it's been a tenure of questionable decision-making, not putting guys in really good spots, almost trying to force the system onto players, kind of like what we saw here with Patricia. He's got a system that he wants to run, and he wants the guys to run his system. It's not him adapting his system to his players. He thinks he has the magic formula, and he's trying to make it work. And the connections just aren't working right now. And so they've struggled. So, his offensive coordinator, Mick Lombardi, he's coming from, most recently New England. He was originally broke into the league with San Francisco. Then he joined the Pats and then spent a couple years as McDaniel's assistants. He was a quarterbacks coach, wide receivers coach. And then he's followed him to Las Vegas, but it's really, this is McDaniel's offense. McDaniel's is the guy who makes the calls, makes the plays. So it's really Josh McDaniel's is the OC here, which we're seeing more and more right in the NFL. A lot of offensive coordinators just as like holding those titles as formalities, I guess, while the head coaches call plays. It's becoming a trend in the NFL, even more so, I feel. On defense, Patrick Graham got his start in the NFL in New England. Then he goes to the Giants, the the Packers, the Dolphins, and then back to the Giants. And ends up back with Josh McDaniels here again. He's been a defensive coordinator for the last five seasons. Yeah, he's 19, 20, 21, 22. So, yeah, this is his fifth season. But his defenses have never really been great. They've typically been average. And this year's defense is below average. They're having a hard time stopping the run. And they look a lot better against the pass. But most of that is because everyone is just running on them, right? They try and run a 3-4 base, but it's a modified 3-4. So it looks like a 4-3. Don't worry about those terms. Just the basic thing is they're going to put four men on the line of scrimmage to try and rush a considerable amount of time. They will also bring a fifth guy onto the line of scrimmage in order when they feel like they're in a run situation or if they feel like they're going against a run heavy team. For the Lions, I expect them to take an approach of like a more pass happy offense, which means I expect them to be in more of like a four man front the majority of the time. If the Lions do find success on the ground, they're going to show you some five man looks, but for the most part, they're just running four guys. But like I said, they've got Max Crosby and then eight other defensive linemen, and they just kind of rotate all those guys through. And sometimes they'll give you four-man looks. Sometimes they'll give you five-man looks. When they sacrifice an extra defender for that fifth man up front, it's almost always the nickelback. And, their corners and safeties they stay on the field the whole time. It's usually roll with two linebackers the whole time. But it's that nickel swap for a defensive lineman that it's very trendy in the NFL right now.
So you mentioned the offensive coordinators, Mick Lombardi. The offensive assistant wide receivers coach is Matt Lombardi. They're brothers. Their father is former general manager, Michael Lombardi.
Yeah.
So you know these two young men have worked their hardest to get where they are in life. And we're going to see it on Monday. We're going to see a brilliantly run offense. That's extremely creative. All right. So get ready for that on Monday. And defensively, strength and conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Strength and conditioning assistant coach, Deuce Gruden. So he couldn't even get his way onto the staff, onto the X's and O's staff. He's part of the strength. Very important, the strength and conditioning staff. I was just looking at the coaching roster, and I saw some peculiarities that we see every week, but we probably should point them out.
Sure. All right.
Offensively, quarterbacks, Jimmy Garoppolo, he was out last week. Brian Hoyer started in his place, proud Spartan, although, probably not so proud over the last week, but still proud overall. Aiden O'Connell, third stringer. He started, 3 weeks ago against the Chargers. Probably won't see him because McDaniels had a quote about, why are you starting Brian Hoyer? It's like, because it's not the preseason or something like that, even though he started Aiden O'Connell for a game. So
right. But that's typical of Josh McDaniels. Like he's doing one thing and saying another, or doing one thing and then changing his mind. Like, he's very contradictive.
Back to Garoppolo.
Yes. Seven touchdowns, eight interceptions on the year. That's not great.
This 3-2 record though in the five starts. Win. All you got to do is win. Doesn't matter how you do it. Like, his stats are from, the 70s, more interceptions than touchdowns, barely over 50% completion percentage.
It beat Denver.
Oh, no, 68%. I'm sorry. I was way off. He's been very accurate.
He's beat Denver, an ugly Green Bay game on Monday night. And then New England. He was hurt halfway through the New England game. Left at halftime, but they were leading. So I guess you can give him the win on that one, maybe. But, yeah, it was – he's – he doesn't have this system. Like McDaniel's system is overly complicated. All right. And it's, so he uses pre-snap motion, he uses play action pass, he uses a lot of standard things that you see in these, in the West Coast schemes. And they're all designed to expose the defense to create matchups, right? And his offense takes it like another step. Like, it's not just about being able to diagnose pre-snap where your advantage is, but then also once the snap is made, the wide receivers then have to be able to diagnose things on the fly. And then the quarterback has to know what they're doing and make the right call with them as well. When you have a quarterback like Tom Brady, who understands all of these things in and out, the system is phenomenal. And that's why they were so successful for so long. But when you have a quarterback like Jimmy Garoppolo, there's some hiccups in that system, and it's a little bit harder to learn, and it's a little bit unnecessarily complex. And so there's a lot of layers to his offense. Jimmy's not, you know, there's some hiccups to his game. Jimmy also throws some balls that are not, they're not very wide receiver friendly, right? Like, he'll throw guys over the middle when the safety's closing down, and so that he gets like smashed, right? He'll throw, try and throw plays early to anticipate, and he throws, that's how he throws picks. And he's not making correct reads. He's a difficult system to work with, and it's just hasn't quite been there. And I don't know if it will. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. At this point, 7 games into this season, I mean, maybe if McDaniel sticks around there for another season, which is kind of the rumor, because the rumor is they don't have the money to fire him. Like, they can't afford to fire him and replace him, because coaches' money, coaches get their salary, their whole salary guaranteed. So, like, the rumor is that if they fire him, they won't be able to hire anybody because they don't have the capital. And
I
so,
know why you're saying that.
No,
who's
no,
their most obvious hire?
No, I'm not worried.
Ann Arbor.
I'm not worried about that. I'm not worried about that at all. But that's like the rumor. The rumor is he's probably going to be their coach for another year. And so, you know,
they
could
can't
that
catch
be
him on the phone with anybody to where they wouldn't have to pay him?
maybe they could. Maybe
there's
they could
be,
find.
There's got to be certain you're getting fired for cause where you don't have to pay him.
Oh, certainly. But yeah, it doesn't look like a traditional get him out of town. And the Raiders fans have petitions that they're sending to the owner talking about McDaniels, is they don't want him as a coach anymore. It's so my point is back to Garoppolo. Maybe time in the system will help him, but he's not there right now. And there'll be times when he'll flash and look good, but inevitably he ends up getting caught more often than not.
All right, running back group. Josh Jacobs is the leader. Zamir White, Amir Abdullah, Brandon Bolden back him up. You know, we know Jacobs well, especially those playing fantasy football out there. You know, he was a bell cow running back last season. This year, not having such a great year so far.
It's so weird, right? Because, like, they strive for balance on offense, yet they've been extremely pass heavy, and they default to the pass when they struggle. Yet Jacobs was the rushing leader last year.
Right, won the rushing crown.
He had 1,600 plus yards and averaged 4.9 yards a carry. Those are impressive numbers. Yet this season, he's averaging 2.9 yards a carry. His offensive line is not creating holes for him. He's getting hit on average within 1 yard of the line of scrimmage. He's getting hit. And overall, the unit as a whole is only averaging 3 yards a rush. That's dead last in the NFL. Jacobs only has less than 350 yards on the season. and he only gets the ball about two-thirds of the offensive snap. So like, this is a guy who is extremely talented, held out, you decided to pay him, and now you're not even using him like a bell cow. You're using him two-thirds of the time. I mean, you're giving snaps to Amir Abdul and Zamir White instead of the guy who was arguably one of, if not the best running back in football last year, and you're taking him off the field. You're not using him right. You're not clearing holes for him, and he's not finding ways to create himself either. Now, if you talk to Dan Campbell is, man, he's a shoelace away from breaking these games open, and he's dangerous. Well, that's the stuff they have to say. Yeah, absolutely has to say it. At the same time, they have done him no favors, and he hasn't been able to step up either. And the running game has been a disaster. 32nd in the league, and they haven't been up against like these stellar run defenses either. Like, they've been playing pretty average to below average run defenses, and still have not been able to have success. They average 68.6 yards.
That's bad.
A game. That's 32nd. They average 3.0 yards a rush. That's 32nd. The rushing leader, like I said, is at 2.9. They're only scoring 16 points a game, which is 30th. Like, it's just getting smashed. Unsuccessful after unsuccessful play. And I mentioned the turnovers with Garoppolo. Like, their turnover ratio right now is -1.4 a game, which means they're throwing 2.1 turnover. They're having 2.1 turnovers a game, which is 31st in the NFL. Yet they're only getting 0.7 a game, which means their plus minus is -1.4. So they're giving up a turnover and a half a game. That's last in the league as well. So they're turning the ball over. They can't run. They're not scoring the ball. They're kicking field goals when they should be trying to score touchdowns, because that lack of success in the run game has really put a damper on their ability to find success in the red zone, to find success on third downs. They're only 35% success rate. That's 25th in the NFL. Their touchdowns in the red zone is only 41%. That's 25th in the NFL as well. And so, like, this lack of success in the run game with the rushing leader on your roster is very, it's very strange nugget to figure out. And it's a huge reason why their offense has been so just stagnant.
Wide receiver group, here's where it gets a little better. Davante Adams, Jacoby Myers, the aforementioned Trey Tucker in the slot. Off the bench, Hunter Renfrow, DeAndre Carter, Christian Wilkerson.
Adams is one of the best receivers in the game. Yet, they can't get him the ball. And when they do try and pepper him, still doesn't do a ton. He's had one really good game this year. Beyond that, it's been pretty bad. To the point that he's whispering about, you know, possibly being traded. People are whispering about him possibly being traded. And it's not a great situation. Jacoby Myers is terrifically underrated. He can produce, but again, he produces in the short to intermediate area, which is where they find a lot of success. And they paid Hunter Renfrow an insane amount of money to come off the bench. And yeah, so
use him.
Hunter Renfrow against Chicago did not get targeted until the game was already out of hand and there was only like 4.5 minutes left in the game. And they were already down. They were down like 3 scores or whatever it was. Like, they didn't even target him. They didn't even try. Like, they have opted to go with Trey Tucker instead of Renfrow. Look, Renfrow is a lot like the Danny Amendolas and, you know, like they had with the Patriots when in that McDaniel system. Hunter Renfrow should fit in this system well. They paid him to fit into this system well. Yet they have opted to go with Trey Tucker, who is more of a gadget guy, who does sweeps, end arounds, bubble screens, stuff like that. And they've decided to go that avenue with the slot instead of your quicker than fast Danny Amendola type, which is what Hunter Renfro is. And in all honesty, they should try and deal Hunter Renfro because he's making way too much money to only play a handful of snaps and not catch a ball till the, you know, the game's out of hand. So talent, lots of talent, totally being misused though.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
It really is.
Tight end group, Michael Mayer, as we put the rookie from Notre Dame, Austin Hooper, the veteran showing him the way, and Jesper Horsted.
So Hooper
Jesper.
Hooper was really good a few years back, but he's kind of fallen off a little bit. Mayer is their future. He's the guy that they're putting into the driver's seat. Had a really good game a couple weeks ago. But he has just been average. This is not Sam Laporta we're talking about here. This is about what rookie tight ends do. They have very up and down weeks. Some weeks are really good. Some weeks are really bad. Lions struggle against the tight end. And so Mayer may have a good game here. But it's another good weapon that they just – aren't putting to use as, I think, impactfully as they can.
Raiders employ a fullback. His name's Jacob Johnson. He used to play for New England. I don't think he's ever had a carry, but he's got some passes.
Yeah, they use him. They use him about a quarter of the time, but he's not very good. But they still lean on it because it's part of the scheme. Scheme says you need a fullback, so they got one, and they trot him out there.
All right, offensive line left to right, Colton Miller, Dylan Parham, Andre James, Greg Van Roten, and Thayer Munford Jr.
It's not a bad offensive line, and they're actually pretty good pass protectors. And so, like, if you look at, like, their PFF scores and stuff, I bet you'll probably see positive marks on all of them. Colton Miller, I think, is the best of the bunch. He's a really legitimate left tackle. He's very good. First round pick from a few years back, if I'm not mistaken. The rest of the guys are average, but like I said, good pass blockers, not good run blockers. And then the fact that none of them are really good run blockers is part of the reason why that run game has been so rough. And so it'll be hard to get some sacks. I think at the same time, this is the type of stagnant pocket passer that the Lions tend to go after and find success hitting. So we'll see. It'll be an interesting matchup because, like I said, good pass protection, and then but their offensive style really suits the way Detroit has found success from a pass rushing standpoint. So be nice little battle there in the trenches.
You're right about Colton Miller, 2018 first round pick, 15 overall out of UCLA. You mentioned a big thing that we got to keep. They struggled with Lamar Jackson, obviously. That's an understatement. Yeah. Struggle with Geno Smith a bit, struggle with Patrick Mahomes, but, you know, against the guys who aren't so dangerous. And, you know, Geno Smith's really not a runner, but, like, he's dangerous. He can move a little bit in the pocket and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but against the more statuesque quarterbacks, they've been able to feast so far. All right. Defensive side of the ball, across the front, Max Crosby, you mentioned him, that we're going to hear his name a lot. Jerry Tillery, Bilal Nichols, Malcolm Kuntz.
So, John Jenkins probably needs to be mentioned in that group as well, because John Jenkins is a pretty good run defender. But like I said before, they use these guys in like a pretty heavy rotation. The Tillery, Jenkins, Nichols, those three are your primary two interior guys. So Jenkins, Nichols, Tillery, those three guys will rotate that interior quite a bit. They'll get spelled by Adam Butler a little bit more as well. But really, the Jenkins-Nichols combo, I think, is their best. Tillery, I think, is a bit overrated. And even though I think he might technically be their starter. In my mind, he's not as good as the other two. On the edges, like I said, Max Crosby holds down one side by himself. On the other side, it's Kuntz, Rochelle, and then Tyree Wilson. And those three guys basically just rotate that side. And when they decide to add another defensive lineman onto the field, it's often just like one of those guys. It's often like, and typically it's Rochelle, not Wilson, which is kind of interesting. They'll take Rochelle, stand him up a little bit, opposite of Crosby, but like outside of like Kuntz or maybe even outside of Wilson. But those three guys kind of man the other side, because Max Crosby is really the gem here. He plays on basically every snap. He's good against the run. He's good against the pass. He is currently the player with the most pressures. He jumped Aiden Hutchinson by one. Now he's one ahead of Aiden. I think he has 43. Aiden has 42, if I'm not mistaken, or at least in that range. Him and Aiden and Crosby are very similar in a lot of ways, where they're both dynamic in, against the pass and the run. They're both nonstop motors. They're both guys that aren't going to be like flashy like the Bosas, but they're just, they win on their hard work and their endurance and just their power. And so Crosby is going to be a guy that they're going to have to account for. They will flip the line back and forth. So, but the majority of the time, Crosby will line up against Penei Sewell. Sometimes we'll see him against Decker, like I said, because they'll flip it. But the Crosby versus Sewell matchup is going to be worth the price of your ticket if you are in Ford Field. Because if even if you just watch those two battle, it's going to be a heck of a lot of fun. Because you're talking about the leader who is the pressure leader up against a guy who's only allowed three on the season. And like I said, only one from the right side in Sewell. So it's a strength on strength battle of two really just impressive players. And it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, because it's going to be a lot of fun. From an attacking standpoint, I think you want to avoid Jenkins if you can. You want to avoid Max Crosby if you can. The Bears really exposed them on outside zone. I mean, the Bears also ran gap power too, which is, you know, they found success with that. But for what the Lions do best in Jahmyr Gibbs and you know what we've seen against the Raiders, the outside zone should work against them. Just run away from Max Crosby. Whichever side Crosby lines up, run the other way and run outside zone to that other way. And Gibbs is going to find an opportunity to get into space. You get him into space, you let him make cuts. And the Bears gashed them all game with that outside zone. And so I would expect to see some of that, because like I said, if you had Montgomery, you're probably going to run more gap power. But with Gibbs, run some outside zone. Outside zone works really well against this front. And so I expect to see that quite a bit.
Off the ball linebackers, they have a pair of them that have started every game, Divine Diablo and Robert Spillane, Luke Masterson, Kanai Mauga, and Curtis Bolton off the bench.
So Diablo is injured and out. So you're probably going to see Masterson play in this game. He got injured. Diablo got injured last game, played about a quarter of the way through the game or something like that. And so, but yeah, before that, Diablo was playing a ton. He played like almost every snap against New England. And same, I believe against Green Bay. And so Diablo is going to be a guy that they have to replace. They replaced him last week with Masterson. And historically Masterson hasn't been very good. He's had some good games this year, but it's definitely a downgrade from Diablo, because Diablo is a guy that allows them to switch between the four and five man fronts, because Diablo can shift out into the slot and he can cover tight ends. That's a harder a task for Masterson. Also why I believe you're going to see more four man fronts against the Lions, because you can't really slide Masterson out to cover the slot like they did with Diablo. So low key Diablo could be a big loss for this defense.
All right, moving back to the secondary. Cornerbacks, Nate Hobbs is listed as questionable. Marcus Peters, who's been there every week, Jacorian Bennett, Amik Robertson, Tyler Hall, David Long Jr.
Yeah, Peters is one of their starters, aging veteran. Hobbs will probably play. He's primarily their slot guy. Amik Robertson is their other starter, but he doesn't play every snap. They're not as sold as him being like CB2. So you will see David Long Jr. You will see Ja'Corian Bennett. Those guys will find the field because they're not as sold on that CB2 spot. They like Peters. They like Hobbs in the slot. Tyler Hall's his backup. He's not bad either. But that outside corner spot opposite Peters is they're not comfortable with it. And so they use different guys at different points and try and see if they can get one of them hot. And they haven't had a lot of success with it so far. So I don't think they're going to play matchup. So you can basically line your guys up and then just see who ends up on the guy opposite Peters. And this could be a good game for the outs. I mean, look, they're going to be able to find room, I think, against this, this secondary, and the CB2 spot is vulnerable.
In the core, and not the corners, but in the safeties, Marcus Epps, Trayvon Moehrig, with Chris Smith the second, and Isaiah Polamau off the bench.
Epps and Moehrig are actually pretty good players. Moehrig is a guy who I think is ascending, could be a real good player in the league down the stretch, you know, of his career. Like, he's getting better as he's gone. He's only been in the league a couple of years, but he's a good safety. And so he's a guy you're going to have to be aware of. And when they run like a two deep cover two, you're going to see both those guys out in that shell. But if they run like a single high, it's going to be Epps that drops back to the single high, Moehrig that drops down into the box area. So sometimes that'll be like at the linebacker level. Sometimes you'll see him flank out over a receiver. So if like Moehrig lines up over Amon-Ra, that'll be a good matchup. And that could be, you know, something to pay attention to. At the same time, I'm expecting them to play a lot of two shell. And especially with their, you know, linebackers being beat up and, you know, them being a little bit leery of the Lions passing attack.
All right. The kicking game, the kicker's Daniel Carlson, who in the last 2 years was a first team all pro and a second team all pro kicker, not kicking so great this season, only 11 of 14.
Missed last week. Yeah. Missed last week against the Bears.
Missed both 50 yarders on the season. Missed also a one between 40 and 49, does get 72.4% of his kickoffs for touchbacks.
Yeah, he's, like you said, he's been good. He's a little off, but he's not a bad kicker.
Punter, also, he's got an all-pro in the last couple of years, some Pro Bowls. A.J. Cole III, he's been rock solid this season, averaging 50 yards per punt.
Yep, he's good. So they've got an average special teams unit by DVOA, yet two potential all-pro kickers. Yeah. So what does that tell you? That tells you their coverage units aren't as good. And the fact the fact that they're kicking them out of the end zone is because I don't think they trust their coverage units as well. So return units are average, coverage units are average, even though, and so you're not really making as much use out of these guys maybe as you could, but it's an average special teams unit with a couple of really good kickers.
DeAndre Carter handles both kick and punt returns. He's got a good average on kick returns, 28.6 yards, but he's only returned 5 kicks in 7 games. Run of the mill punt returner, averaging 9.1 yards a return.
Yep. Well, I should mention they blocked an extra point last week too. Well, so
that's worth noting.
Yeah, against the Bears. So, and you know,
maybe the Lions won't send Riley Patterson out there at all.
Oh, great.
They try to avoid having him kick field goals. Maybe they'll try to avoid kicking extra points as well.
I'm okay with it. Go for two.
Long snapper is Jacob Bobenmoyer, if that's worth mentioning. probably it helps them push them to the middle of the special teams.
I don't know anything about him. Sorry, Jason.
Right. Well, I don't. One of these days, we're going to know something about one of these long snappers. He's either going to have gone to Michigan or Michigan State, or who's the guy the Lions drafted? Isn't that the Lions draft a long snapper? And he, I don't think he ever came. Once the Lions cut him, I don't think he ever got back.
Jimmy Landis? No, he is not in the league.
He's doing something else for a living. Well, unless he's in the XFL or USFL or
no, Canada. I think he's at his dad's car dealership or something like that. Okay. If I'm not mistaken,
well, he got a little cachet. He could be in the commercial. Remember me? I used to be a long snapper. All right, we got the details out there. How's this game going to shape up?
So so last week we both lost, but
dreadfully wrong.
The way that we our do the points, I beat you by a point.
All right.
So I'm back in the lead 4-3 on the season, right. Which means I have to go first. And so I'm kind of back and forth on this. Like at different times, I'm like, man, this could really be a close game. And I'm a little bit worried about the Lions offensive line. At the same time, the Lions have an advantage in almost every aspect, and I'm not scared of their defense. I'm not scared of their running game is so bad, and their offense turns it over. And then McDaniel's ability to just kick field goals when he should be aggressive is just the coward's way out in a lot of ways. And so I'm actually going to predict a Lions win. Well, I say actually, I don't think it's surprising that I'm picking a Lions win.
Right. Yep.
My actually is because I'm actually picking it to be big. I said before the Raiders average 16 points a game. I think they're going to get that average. I think they're going to kick 3 field goals and 1 touchdown. I think they're going to hit 16. At the same time, I think the Lions are going to hit 31. So I'm going big. 31-16 Lions win. I expect it to be a 4 touchdown game and a Riley Patterson contribution. And I hope I don't regret it, because the offensive line scares me a bit, but at the same time, I expect them to be focused, ready, and to lay the wood.
Yeah. So I hope you're right. And I think your prediction's not that far off, but I'll keep it closer, because I am concerned about that offensive line. I'm concerned about the defense. Did, you know, the Ravens catch something that the Raiders can, you know, piggyback off of? Who knows? I'm going to go with Lions 24, Raiders 20.
All right. Yeah, much closer. So that'll be the deciding factor. It'll probably be, is it a close game? You're going to get it. If it's not, I'll be sipping champagne as we head into the bye. So, well, I they really feel like they need to come out and reestablish themselves. And this is a week where they've said the right things. They seem to be refocused. Humbled. Yeah. Yeah. Humbled, for
refocused.
Real.
And I don't, they weren't,
arrogant or anything.
Yeah.
Like
they weren't
that.
Arrogant
yeah,
on their winning streak, but I don't, they probably felt, hey, it's going to be tough to beat us. And then they went out and got beat pretty soundly. And it's like, oh, wait a second. Not going to be as easy as it looks.
I'm hoping for a statement. Be the fourth time that they've won, on a national televised game, like one of the Monday Thursday games. I think they did get this to be their fourth in a row, and so it all lines up to me to say they should have a lot of advantages. They should be able to, you know, respond, and maybe it's just me hoping that they respond, but and maybe I'm drinking a little too much of my Kool-Aid here, but
right.
I expect them to really come out heavy.
Right. I, and there's nothing wrong with you sticking to that, because if last Sunday's game was Ravens 28, Lions 24, you'd be picking it the same way, and everybody would look at it and be like, yeah, why wouldn't they? They did lose last week, but it's not bad. So, I'm probably overreacting and you're probably reacting properly. Usually it's reversed. We usually overreact and like, oh, they're much better than you think they are. And I'm the one who's like, yeah, I don't know. They don't look so good, but I don't think, I hope we're more on your side, and they should be. They're a very talented team. They're still a very young team, and games like last week can happen, and get out of hand in a hurry, because there are some steadying hands, but there's probably not enough with such a young squad. Does that hurt them down the road? I don't know. We'll see.
The 49ers Vikings game gave me a little, it helped ease the hurt.
Yeah, right? It should calm everybody down, because you see, we have that Eagles Jets game two weeks ago, and then you have 49ers Vikings.
San Fran lost two in a row, right?
Right.
So, but yeah, they lose to the Vikings
over there.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm I think this is just a bump in the road, and they come back out and take care of business.
All right, we got a boost in rankings. We got up to 453 on Apple Podcasts with Crazy Captain Nemo updating their 5-star review. Very appreciative. Crazy Captain Nemo out in Nashville, which is a fine town, excellent town, fun town to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And Spotify, I didn't check the spot. I'm sure it got boosted, but I could be wrong. Maybe there's fewer reviews. Maybe they took some away. Bumped up to 212. No, and still holding nice. 5 stars. So thank you very much, everybody out there.
That's great. We've had some, like you said, there's been a couple recently that have really been nice. So those are all appreciated, for real.
Right. It's a nice booster, a nice ego boost for both me and Eric.
Yes.
Whenever people say nice things about us. All right. Do you have anything else to add about this game, Eric?
No. Should be fun in national spotlight. Monday Night Football.
And everybody's going to be loud.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
you're going to be up late, Well, I'm going to be up late too, but you're going to be up late. You're going to be working. You're going to be in Ford Field. You're going to be getting home at, 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I'm going to get home at very late, and it's Halloween the next day, so I am getting up early and getting kids ready, getting costumes.
Why don't you just
on
have those kids take the day off from school, so them stay home, just so dad can sleep in.
They have parties and stuff. So,
no, that's true. Yeah, Halloween is a free day at school.
Yeah. So yeah, I'll be home.
Pizza and candy.
If I can get in 3 hours, 4 hours of sleep before that, I'll be happy. And then it's gonna be muscle my way through the day and write the articles I need, and then Halloween that night. And I'm hoping that
just up and die.
I'm hoping to attach myself to the 3-year-old who now likes to walk on her Halloween. Like before, we used to use the stroller, right? Yeah. Now she likes to walk, and she's a slow walker. And so maybe that'll just allow me to just take my time and take it easy that night.
How many houses does a 3-year-old make it on Halloween?
Not as many as her sisters, who are physically literally running from house to house.
Yeah, they're in their Halloween wheelhouse right now.
Yeah, my kids are all at different pages too, so one's gonna want to go one way, one's gonna want to be with their friends, and then I'm hoping to just grab the hand of that little 3-year-old and just ease
into the night.
Ease on down the road.
To go back in the house.
Yeah, let's hope that that's the straw I draw.
So I'm guessing you and the missus both go out with the girls.
We do.
What happens to the candy at your house? Is it just in a big bowl on the front porch?
Typically, we have a grandparent come over.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's how we've done it in the past. And
what happens at that grandparent's house? Nobody's getting candy.
Well, they either
You can't talk your way out of this one.
They bring their candy to our house, right? Like, and they just don't have it at theirs. So,
you're in a big plus candy situation. You don't even have to buy your own candy. Grandparents are bringing it. And then the kids are going to bring home even more candy. Look at that plus minus on the candy. It's huge in your favor.
It's weird. Like the street like that I'm on, there's...
They're full candy bars, aren't they?
Well,
full size candy bars on that street. I just have a feeling. Too many people are walking around in shirts of where they've gone on vacation. They're giving out full size candy bars.
Well, there's two main like subdivision arteries, like where behind me and then to the side. And mm-hmm. so like a lot of people will just stay on those main arteries. So they don't often go down my street, which is just kind of like a little cut through. And I think the we hit every house on my street to say hi to all my neighbors. And so typically there are a plethora of options for the kids, and they know the kids, so they give them a little extra as well. But yeah, sure, like it's getting better, I think now. The neighborhood is getting older, with the children are getting older, and so we're starting to see more Halloween action with the kids. But we've seen some years before where there's been like 7 kids come to the house, but it's not like that anymore. Now it's a lot heavier. I know you're very busy where you live.
We are heavily trafficked. We're well over 100 kids every year.
Yeah. I don't get that much.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, well, as you pointed out, it is kind of a bad street, you know, like mm-hmm. you could probably hit more houses if you stay on that main. If you stay on the main drags instead of splitting off, it's probably some of the older kids, you know, who can hit more houses.
Well, that's but
turn down those streets and do that.
Hey, but I reward them. If you come down my street,
you got to get rid of that candy.
Yeah, I reward them. Yeah, one way or another, it's going into their bag or into my stomach, one or the other way. And that's into their bag is better for me.
Yeah, but you'd give it a good home nonetheless. All right, that's enough Halloween talk. It's probably the most we've talked about any quote unquote holiday.
Yeah, for sure.
So. All right, that's it.
We're gonna have a Christmas Eve game this year, so
we'll have a Christmas Eve episode. Although it'll be 3 days before Christmas Eve, and all.
And in all honesty, there's a Thanksgiving game every year, so we might talk about that game a little bit more.
Our Thanksgiving discussion is always football related. It is Lions football related. We never head off in any other.
That's true.
Holiday direction. And true I don't story. You know, like we both talk about the turkey we're going to eat. You know? Maybe we will. Maybe we'll try it this year.
All right. Good stuff, buddy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's it. That's all we got for this week. So until next time, let's go Lions.